Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 20, Chapter entitled Pure Devotional Service, Text Number 9. Tavat
Kamani
Kurvita
Na
Nirvedyata
Yavata
Matkata
Shravanado
Va
Shraddha
Yavan
Na
Jayate
Tava
Kamani
Kurvita
Na Vidyeta
Yavata
Matkata Shravanadova
Shraddha
Yavan Jayate Tavat Kamani Kurvita Na Nirvidyeta Yavata Matkata Shravanadova Shudayavana Jayate Tavat Kamani Kurvita Na Nirvidyeta Yavata Matkata Shravanadova Shudayavana Jayate Tavat Kamani Kurvita Nirvidyeta Yavata Matkata Shravanadova Shraddhayavanna Jayate Tavat
up to that time
Kamani
fruitive
activities
Gurvita
one should execute
Na
Nirvidyeta
is not satiated
Yavata
as long as
Matkata
of discourses about me
Shravana
Ado
in the matter of Shravanam Kirtanam and so on
Va
or
Shraddha
faith
Yavat
as long as
Na
not
Jayate
is awakened
Translation
and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada.
As one as long
is not satiated by fruitive activity
and has not awakened
his taste for devotional
service by
Shravanam,
Kirtanam,
Vishnu,
one
has to act according
to the regulative
principles of
the Vedic injunctions.
Translation
responsible.
As long as
one is not satiated
by fruitive
activity,
and has not
awakened his
taste for devotional
service.
By
Shravanam
Kirtanam
Vishnu.
One
has to act according
to the regulative
principles of the
Vedic injunctions.
Purport.
Unless
one has developed firm
faith in Lord
Krishna by
association with pure
devotees and
is thus engaged
full-time
in the devotional
service of the Lord,
one should
not neglect
ordinary Vedic
principles and
duties.
As
stated by the Lord himself,
Shruti,
Smriti,
Ramai,
Vagye Yaste Ulangya Vartate Agyaj Chedi Mama Dweshi Madbhakto Pi Na Vaishnavaha. The Shruti and Smriti literatures are to be understood as my injunctions, and one who violates such codes is to be understood as violating my will and thus opposing me. Although such a person may claim to be my devotee, he is not actually a Vaishnava. The Lord here states that if one has not developed firm faith in the process of chanting and hearing, one must comply with ordinary injunctions of Vedic literatures. There are many symptoms by which one can recognize an advanced devotee of the Lord. In the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam 127, it is stated, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Janiyat Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayat Ohoitukam. One who is actually engaged in advanced devotional service immediately develops both clear knowledge of Krishna consciousness and detachment from non-devotional activities. One who is not situated on this platform must comply with the ordinary injunctions of Vedic literature or risk becoming inimical to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the other hand, one who has developed great faith in the devotional service of Lord Krishna does not hesitate to do anything that will further the mission of the Lord. As is stated in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11.5.41, Devashi bhutapta nunam pitrinam nakinkaro nayam rini charajam savatmana yash sharanam sharanyam kato makundam parihuchekatam. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Srila Jiva Goswami points out in this regard that when a person fully surrenders to Lord Krishna, he takes shelter of the Lord's promise to liquidate all other responsibilities and debts of the surrendered soul. The devotee thus becomes fearless by meditating on the Lord's promise of protection. Those, however, who are materially attached are frightened by the prospect of full surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thereby revealing their inimical mentality towards the Lord. Amagyan Timalandasya. Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Vancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhedacha Petitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishna Vibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Rama Ram Ram Hare Hare. So in the Nectar of Devotion, there are 64 items of bhakti which are mentioned by Rupa Goswami. Mm-hmm. Practicing devotional service is constituted by 64 items. In the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's final instruction, or the rahasya of the Bhagavad Gita, is Mamana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. So he gives four instructions to finish the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Manmana, which means?
Think of me.
Always think of me. Manmana. Bhava Mad Bhakto.
Become
my devotee. Madhyaji.
Worshipping.
Mam Namaskaru. Offer your obeisances to me. So he gives four instructions. This is the Rahasya. Rahasya means secret of the Bhagavad Gita. This is the secret of the Gita. All the entire Bhagavad Gita is summarized by these four instructions. Everything which is in the Bhagavad Gita is in these four instructions. This is all a devotee needs to meditate upon. Now, Prahlad Maharaj, in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, then he elaborates those four into nine. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma Nivedanam. Shravanam means Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, worshipping the Lord's feet, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, worshipping the deity, Archanam, Vandanam, offering prayers, Vandanam, Vandanam, offering prayers, Vandanam, then Sakyam, friendship, Sakyam, no, sorry, Dasyam, becoming a servant, Dasyam, Sakyam means becoming a friend, and Atmanivedanam means giving everything to Krishna. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mammana Baba Mabhapto Madhyaji Mannamaskaru. Now Prahlad Maharaj, he expands those four into nine. So those nine are the nine items of bhakti, devotional service. Now Rupa Goswami, he expands those nine into 64. Now the 64, it is mentioned that of the 64, the first three are the most important. What is the first one? Adore. Adore means Adi. Adi means in the beginning. Adore. Spiritual life begins with Guru, Pad, Ashraya. Ashraya means shelter, ashram. We live in the ashram. So that means Ashraya. We take shelter. And Guru Pad, of the lotus feet of the Guru. This is where spiritual life begins. Because if you do not have a spiritual master, how will you learn the other 63 items of bhakti? Who will instruct you? Who will teach you? Who will tell you how to perform those 64 items? Who will exemplify those 64 items to you? Who will show you the correct mood in performing those other 63 items of bhakti? Or the 64? The qualification to become a guru means that you yourself are a perfect disciple. That is your qualification. So Guru Pada Shraya. Right? How do you learn to become, how do you learn to take shelter of a guru? You learn to take shelter of a guru by studying the example of how your guru takes shelter of his guru. Right? Just like, how did ISKCON begin? Where was the inspiration for ISKCON to begin? Right? The entire inspiration for ISKCON to begin was from everyone who became a follower of Srila Prabhupada. They learnt this first item of bhakti from Prabhupada, who exemplified it perfectly. Prabhupada was a perfect disciple of Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur. He is the foremost disciple of Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur. He most perfectly exemplified Guru Pad Ashraya, taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Guru, with full faith, with full dedication, with 100% surrender to Krishna. That's what it means to be a disciple. To be a disciple means that you must give 100% to your spiritual master. 99% is not enough. You must be fully surrendered to the Guru. That is actually how you advance in Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna says, Yeyata mam prapajante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. As you surrender to me, I reward you accordingly. So if you give 99%, you only get 99% reciprocation. But if you give 100%, Krishna gives 100% reciprocation. So Rupa Goswami, he expands these four original items of bhakti, which then go into nine, into 64 items of devotion, of which it is said the first three are the most important. And then it is explained that
the first 20 are the most important. The first 10 are known as Vidhi, and the second 10 are known as Nisheda. Vidhi means those things which must be accepted. And Nisheda means those things which must be avoided. So these are called the Bhakti Dwaram, or the gateway to Bhakti. You must practice these first 20 items of the Nectar of Devotion carefully and perfectly to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. So one of the first 10 items that Rupa Goswami gives, he says that one must not be neglectful in ordinary dealings. It's very interesting. This is one of the first 10 items of bhakti that Rupa Goswami says. He says that you must not be neglectful in ordinary dealings. It's not because we are devotees that we neglect our material responsibilities. Just like you see the example of the Goswamis. Raghunath Das Goswami, when he was a young boy, he associated with Haridas Thakur. And by associating with Haridas Thakur, he heard about the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then, as he grew up, he wanted to become a follower of Lord Chaitanya. He wanted to give up everything and go and associate with Lord Chaitanya. But his father and uncle, Govardhan and Hiranya, were zamindars, which means they were tax collectors on behalf of the Muslim government, or the Mughal government. So they were extremely wealthy, because they would collect all the money within their province, within their area, and they would give it to the Nawab, to the Qazi, to the Muslim ruler, like that. Now, for doing that service of being the tax collector, they would be paid very handsomely. They would get a large amount of money. They were very, very wealthy, extremely wealthy. And these, compared to what people are like these days, they would be millionaires. They're extremely wealthy. Now, not only did they collect the money, but because they were Vaishnavas, they were devotees, they didn't give all the money to the Nawab. Because he's a Muslim and he was impious, so they didn't give everything to him. They kept a portion also. So not only were they paid very well, but they also kept a portion. So they were very, very wealthy. So Raghunath Das Goswami, he was born in a family of millionaires. He had everything that he desired was at his disposal. And they arranged for him to marry a very beautiful wife. She was said to be as beautiful as an apsara from heaven. Extremely beautiful girl. So he had a very beautiful wife, and he had unlimited wealth, and a very loving, caring family. He had everything materially desirable. But still, because he had associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had no interest in any of this. He only wanted to go and be a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. He simply wanted to get the association of Lord Chaitanya. So then, he would continuously request his parents, "Let me go and associate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." And they'd say, "No, no, it's not good for you. You can do this when you're older. When you're old, you can associate with sadhus. Not now. If you associate too much now, you might also become a sadhu. You might also give up." So he would always try to go and associate with Lord Chaitanya. But he was continuously restricted by his parents. One time, they agreed to let him go. So after Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, and then after the sannyas ceremony of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he said to Lord Nityananda, he said, "Take me to Vrindavan." So then Lord Chaitanya was being taken by Lord Nityananda to Vrindavan, but Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy. So he did not know where he was. He didn't know if this was Vrindavan, if this was Bengal, if this was UP, if it was Madhya. He didn't know where he was. So Lord Nityananda brought him to the bank of the Ganges. And when Lord Chaitanya came to the bank of the Ganges, he said, "Is this the Jamuna?" And Lord Nityananda said, "Yes, this is the Jamuna." Actually, he wasn't lying, because the Jamuna joins into the Ganga. And then it said the Jamuna runs on one side and the Ganga runs on the other side. So technically he wasn't lying, but Lord Chaitanya thought he was in Vrindavan. So he said, "Is this the Jamuna?" And then he said, "Yes, this is the Jamuna. You are in Vrindavan." So then, actually, he had taken him to Shantipur so that he could go to the house of Advaita Acharya and he could associate one more time with all the devotees of Navadvip. So then he got to the bank of the what he thought was the Jamuna, and then he saw Advaita Acharya was rowing a boat across the river. So then Lord Chaitanya saw Advaita Acharya rowing the boat, and the boat got close, and he said, "Advaita Acharya," he said, "what are you doing in Vrindavan?" And Advaita Acharya said to him, "Wherever you are is Vrindavan." So then he got into the boat with him, and he realized Lord Nityananda had tricked him. And they went across the river to Shantipur, and he stayed there for 9 days in the house of Advaita Acharya. And all the devotees from Navadvip came to associate with him. And Mother Sachi, every day she cooked a huge feast for all of the devotees. And the devotees would just engage in Sankirtan with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had now taken sannyas. So at that time, Raghunath Das Goswami was allowed to come with some servants. He was allowed to go and associate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Shantipur. So he stayed with him for 9 days. He was still very young. And he associated with Lord Chaitanya, and then he said to Mahaprabhu, he said, "I want to also become one of your associates. I want to travel with you. I want to renounce everything." But Lord Chaitanya understood this would be very difficult because his parents had sent him to visit Lord Chaitanya, and he had bodyguards so that he would not disappear. So Lord Chaitanya understood the situation. So he gave him the instruction. He said, "Go back and perform your material duties." He said, "Go back and do everything very nicely." And he gave the instruction, which he also later gave the same instruction to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. He said, "Perform your material duties very nicely, but internally always think of Krishna." And he gave the example, Lord Chaitanya gave the example of a paramour. He said that the devotee should be like a paramour. Someone who is married but is having an affair with another person. So in terms of our material duties, just like if the woman is having an affair with someone else, then she does all of her household duties even more nicely, because she doesn't want anyone to detect that she's actually having an affair. So the husband is served even more nicely, but actually in her mind she's always thinking of meeting her paramour. So Lord Chaitanya said that in terms of doing your worldly duties, do everything very nicely. Perform your Grihastha Dharma and your Vaishya Dharma very nicely, but internally always think of Krishna. And he said that very soon Krishna will deliver you. Very soon Krishna will come and he will take you. He will deliver you. So this is the instruction which is given by Rupa Goswami in the very beginning of the items of bhakti in the nectar of devotion. Rupa Goswami says a devotee should perform his material duties very responsibly. We should not be materially irresponsible. If we have children, if we have wife, if we have husband, right? Whatever we have in the material world, we should be very dutiful. We should do everything perfectly. We should not be materially irresponsible. Devotees should be the best examples. Right? Devotees should show the best example of marriages. Because in Kali Yuga, everything is very confused. And people need to see proper examples. There aren't proper examples these days. Right? People don't see good examples. They should come to associate with the Hare Krishna movement. They should see these people are the best people. They have the best marriages. They look after their children in the most loving, caring way. They treat each other in the most loving, caring way. They should see all of the material responsibilities of this world being shown to the highest degree by the devotees. But internally, the devotees are not attached. Internally, the devotees are only thinking of Krishna. They just think of the order of the spiritual master and Krishna's service. But actually, the order of the spiritual master is to be materially responsible. When I went to see my spiritual master, he said, just before I got married, I went and introduced him to Veda Priya for the first time. He said, "This is your main service now. Your main service is to be a good grihastha, is to be a good husband." Right? And he said, "If you have children, then your main service is to be a good father and a good mother." This is our main service. This is serving our spiritual master, first and foremost. Then on top of that, then you preach. On top of that, then you do your devotional activities. But if you're doing all of your devotional activities, but your children and your wife or your husband are being neglected, then what is the success of your devotional activities? Is Krishna pleased? No, Krishna is not pleased. Krishna is pleased. That's why Rupa Goswami says one of the items of bhakti is he must be materially responsible. This pleases Krishna the most. Right? And then Krishna sees you're doing all that nicely. Now, begin to serve me. Even one time, Prabhupada wrote a letter when he heard that one of the children were being neglected because the mother was going off early every morning to worship the deity in the temple. Right? So she was getting up very early every morning, going off to worship the deity in the temple. Prabhupada said, your child is your deity. You worship, you look after your child first, then you serve the deity. Right? This is the responsibility. So we have to understand the correct mood. So Lord Chaitanya said to Raghunath Das Goswami, he said, don't be materially irresponsible. He said, do everything very nicely. But always think of Krishna. He said, Krishna will deliver you. So Raghunath Das Goswami, he went back, and then he was so attached to Lord Chaitanya that he kept trying to escape. He did his duty for some time, but it was just the separation from Lord Chaitanya was too intense. So he kept trying to say he would lie down at night. He had the most beautiful wife in the country, but he would sleep out on the balcony. She would sleep in the room. He would sleep on the balcony outside. He wouldn't even sleep in the same room as her. He was not attached. And then he would wake up in the night and he would think of Lord Chaitanya and he'd just get up and he'd begin to run. And then the soldiers who his parents had put 6 guards to always guard him. They would chase him and bring him back. For 2 years this took place. And then his mother said to his father, his mother said, we should tie him up. We've got to tie him up. Tie him to one of the pillars in the house. And his father said, we've already tied him up. He said, he's got the most beautiful wife in the country. Right? He has a huge inheritance. Right? I mean, he's already tied. And he's still, this doesn't tie him. He said, what can we do? So then one night he went to with Yadubara Acharya, who was one of the Yadunandan Acharya, who was also a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya and was the family's guru. He was the Kula guru, or the guru of the family. And he went and they said they were going to perform a yajna. So they went to perform the yajna. Raghunath Das Goswami went with Yadubara, Yadunandan Acharya, and the soldiers. And they performed the yajna late into the night, the puja. So his parents said, oh, it's very good. Then come back tomorrow. So then they all took rest. So Yadunandan Acharya and Raghunath Das Goswami, they lied down next to each other. And then all the soldiers, they were staying up. But then a few of them, they were taking shifts. But then the ones who were supposed to be awake, they fell asleep also. And Yadunandan Acharya, he saw. He said, they're asleep. So he whispered to Raghunath Das Goswami, he said, go. He said, go now. So Raghunath Das Goswami got up and he ran. And he ran to Jagannath Puri. And he arrived in Jagannath Puri within around something, I can't remember the exact amount of days, but it was something like 11 days. He went from Bengal to Puri in Orissa in 11 days. Normally it would take 1 month for all of Lord Chaitanya's associates to walk from Mayapur to Puri every year. But he got there in 11 days. He didn't sleep, he didn't practically eat. He would just be going past, someone would be milking a cow. He would stop, they would give him some milk, drink the milk, and he'd just keep running. And he went through the forest, right? Because he knew that the soldiers would be chasing him on the road. So he went through the forest. So by the time he got to Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath Puri, then Lord Chaitanya was sitting there with Sarup Damodar, his secretary, and some other devotees. And then Raghunath Das came in and he had a big beard because he'd been going for 11 days. Right? He looked very dirty, but he felt very ecstatic. He was like an unpolished jewel. He looked very ecstatic and very beautiful, but he was materially, he was very unclean, unshaven. So he came, and he saw Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was sitting there with Swarup Damodar, and then he fell down and offered dandavats, offered full obeisances. And Lord Chaitanya looked, he said, "Who is that?" And he stood up. And Swarup Damodar said, "This is Raghunath Das. And he's come to serve you." And he said, "Oh, Raghunath Das." He said, "Very good." He said, "He's come." He said, "I will give you, that you will become the servant, the secretary, the assistant of Swarup Damodar." So from that time on, he was known as the Raghunath of Swarup. He was the personal servant of Swarup Damodar, who was the personal secretary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he stayed there, and then finally his parents found out where he was, and they sent him a large amount of money. They said, "Come back, please come back." And when the servants brought the large amount of money, he said, "No, I don't want anything. I'm not coming back, and I don't want any money." So then his parents would send him a pension every month, every week, every month. They would send him something to maintain himself, and he would use all of that money to serve the Vaishnavas, to buy nice bhoga, to cook nice prasad for the Vaishnavas. So this is the example which is given. So it is being explained in this purport that one should not be materially irresponsible. Devotional service means we must be materially responsible. We must always be thinking of Krishna. Now in this verse it says, as long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, one has to act according to the regulative principles of Vedic injunctions. So this is called Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. This is described in the Nectar of Devotion by Rupa Goswami. The first 14 chapters, right, in the Nectar of Devotion are Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Sadhana means practice. Practicing bhakti. Right? We practice bhakti. Right? We understand this is bhakti. What is bhakti? Bhakti means there are 64 items. Right? Just like putting on tilak. Right? Putting on tilak is one of the items of bhakti. Right? Chant the mantra. Right? Rub the tilak. Put some water in the palm. Then mix the gopi chanda, the tilak. Right? And then apply it. Chant mantras. And then apply. And as we're applying the tilak, like that, then Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayana Namaha, Om Madhavaya Namaha, Om Govindaya Namaha. Chanting the mantras. You apply the tilak and then you infuse the holy name of the Lord into that symbol. Right? And then it becomes auspicious and purifying. What does the symbol mean? This mark like this that we have on our forehead, that is Krishna's toe. This mark on our nose, this is the tulsi leaf. So we are marking. Krishna's toe always has tulsi on it. So does the lotus feet of Krishna. In other words, my master's footprint or my master's toe print is on my body. Like that. I am the property of my master. That is an item of bhakti. You have to be conscientious when you're putting on your tilak. Just like Jayapataka Swami, sometimes he goes up to the devotees and he says, "Do you put tilak on 12 places? Or are you one of these devotees who just puts it on the forehead because no one can see the other 11? Which devotee are you? Are you the 12 or are you the 1? Jayapataka Swami just walks up to people. He says, "Are you putting tilak on 12 places? Just walks up. And devotees, they look at him. Sometimes they say, "Maharaj, I only put it on my forehead." He said, "No, do not cheapen the process. The process is 12 places. In the temple of Vishnu. Very powerful. It says that if someone sees the devotee wearing tilak, right, then he becomes liberated. Just they see the devotee, they see the symbol on the devotee's head, they become liberated. It purifies them. Purifies their conduct. It purifies us. It purifies those who see us. Therefore, it is an item of bhakti. So therefore, all of these items, they must be practiced very diligently. All of these 64 items of bhakti, they must be practiced very nicely. This is called Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Chapter 6 of the Nectar of Devotion, the Rupa Goswami says, these are the 64 items. Right? And then the rest of the, up till chapter 13, chapter 14, he describes how to perform those items and the importance of those items, so that we understand what is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, Bhakti in practice. And then you get to chapter 15 and chapter 16. Now, what are chapter 15 and 16 about? Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. Right? Because it says here that as long as you don't have a spontaneous taste for hearing and chanting, then you must follow the rules and regulations. But by following the rules and regulations conscientiously, what will take place? You will get a spontaneous attachment to performing these activities. This is called Rag Anuga Bhakti. Rag Anuga Bhakti means you follow in the footsteps of the Rag Atmika devotees. Who are the Rag Atmika devotees? Right, there's a few of them in this temple right now. Rag Atmika. It means they have Rag means spontaneity. Right? Atmika means their soul. Their soul is spontaneously attracted to Krishna. Right? There's a few of them in this temple now. Right? We have one to our right or to your left. Right? We might have one to my left or your right. Right? Srimati Radharani is the topmost Rag Atmika devotee. Srila Prabhupada, right, is the intimate associate of Radha and Krishna, Rag Atmika devotee. Rag Anuga means, Anuga means to follow. You follow the mood of spontaneous devotion that they have. You worship Krishna not out of rule and regulation because you have to, but because of Rag. Because you are spontaneously attracted to Krishna. Because your desire is intense to serve Krishna. That is called Rag Bhakti. So that is the point. We are meant to come to the platform of Rag Anuga Bhakti. Rag Anuga Bhakti means we spontaneously want to serve Krishna. That's why we follow our Vaidhi. That's why we follow our Sadhana. If you're following your Vaidhi, if you're following your Sadhana, if you're doing all the rules and regulations, but this feeling of naturally, spontaneously wanting to serve Krishna is not arising, there is something wrong with your application of the process. It means you're not being conscientious. The whole point of our sadhana is to bring us to this platform. One of the most important items of bhakti, which is mentioned in the first 10 principles, is worship of Srimati Tulsi Devi. To worship Tulsi. That is one of the most important items of bhakti. Right? Now every day, from the very beginning of ISKCON, right, Prabhupada, he gave the prayers. We do Mangalati. After Mangalati, then we do Tulsi Puja. Worshipping Tulsi, Prabhupada gave us very exalted prayers, which are in the mood of Rag Bhakti. O Tulsi, beloved of Krishna, I bow down before you again and again. My desire is to obtain the service of Radha and Krishna. Whoever takes shelter of you has his wishes fulfilled. Bestowing your mercy on him, you make him a resident of Vrindavan. My desire is that you also grant me a residence in the pleasure groves of Sri Vrindavan Dham. Thus, within my vision, I will always behold the beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna. I beg you to make me a follower of the cowherd dancers of Braj. Please give me the privilege of devotional service. And then the final line is? What is that? Yeah, this very lonely, lowly and fallen servant of Krishna prays, may I always swim in the love of Radha and Govinda. Right? So this is Rag Bhakti. Right? That is the prayer of someone who wants something very deeply. Right? That is Rag. That is someone who has very, that prayer is for someone who has very intense attachment. That's what we're meant to come to. That's why Prabhupada gave us this type of sadhana. That's why we've got these prayers and this worship of Tulsi Devi. So we do it in the mood of Vaidhi sadhana. We follow the rule and regulation. What is the rule? The rule is you have to go to Mangalati. What is the rule? The rule is you have to do Tulsi Puja. But it's not that you're meant to stay on the platform of Vaidhi. You're just doing it because it's a rule forever and ever and ever. Eventually, you're supposed to have the mood of spontaneity. And you're actually chanting these prayers with this desire in your heart. Radha Krishna, please make me your servant. That has to become the desire. That is what our Vaidhi is heading towards. So therefore it says here that as long as you don't have that desire, follow the process. And then eventually that desire will come if you are conscientious. If you get the association of devotees who have that desire. But we must follow all the rules and regulations very carefully, because this will bring us. Just like one devotee said to Prabhupada one time, he was very honest, one of Prabhupada's disciples. He said, "Prabhupada, I don't feel like bowing down to you." He said, "What should I do?" Prabhupada said, "You should do it anyway. Then the feeling will come." That is vaidhi. Means that we should do it anyway. Right? You do all the rules and regulations very carefully, and then the feelings will come. But if you don't do it, right, if you don't do all the items, then how will the feeling ever come? But understand what the goal is. The goal is the feeling. The goal is rag. To become a rag atmika devotee. To become one of Krishna's eternal associates. You know, to one day walk into the temple and just keep walking across the temple and then walk into that picture. That's our goal. And then we'll say, what happened to Nandagopa? We'll say, what happened to this devotee? What happened to that devotee? Oh, they went into the picture. Last time we saw them. Lord Chaitanya was dancing. When Lord Chaitanya left this world, right? There are two accounts. One, he was in the Jagannath temple doing kirtan. One, he was in front of Toda Gopinath doing kirtan. Right? And then suddenly, like lightning, he went. He entered Jagannath. Lord Chaitanya said, entered into his form, because he's non-different. And the form that was in the Toda Gopinath temple entered into the Toda Gopinath deity, who is the original deity in this universe. Right? That's a long story, but entered into the form, because he's non-different from Gopinath. This is what will happen to us one day. If our consciousness becomes pure, then at the time of death, most likely, because we probably won't go into a into a picture. Or Narottama Das Thakur went to the sacred river. I think it was the Padmavati. Went to the sacred river, the river Padma, and his body was liquid prema. When he entered the river at the end of his pastimes, his body liquefied, melted, and just floated into the river. That probably won't happen to any of us. You know, we probably won't leave like that. But the word rag actually means colour. It means colour. Rag means colour. So it means that you take a piece of white cloth, you dip it in dye, and then you take it out, it becomes the same colour. So our consciousness needs to become the same like that, and it needs to become saturated with Krishna. So at the time of death, we're just thinking of Krishna and we just enter into the pastimes. That is the goal. That is the goal of the vaidhi. That is the goal of the sadhana, to come to this platform. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Most of the sadhana desire to reach that spontaneous. I want to reach to that spontaneous and then we go to devotional service, but how do you go about it in a mature way, not a fanatic immature way?
You have to follow the process very strictly. Prabhupada said if you want to stay brahmacharya for your whole life, then you should chant 16 rounds before Mangalati. If you want to be brahmacharya for your whole life, then you have to chant 16 rounds before Mangalati. Right? Now what does that show? That shows that someone is quite serious. That shows someone's very serious about Krishna consciousness. So that's the point. If you say like you don't want to do it cheaply, you want to actually do it, then that's what it takes. It takes that kind of commitment. Not that we may actually do that. Prabhupada would be very, very, very happy if we did do that. But even if we don't get to that platform, have your 16 rounds chanted by the time you greet the deities. Like that. Now that's serious. That means you're being very serious about Krishna consciousness, if it's practical, if it's possible. Like that. So that means that's how we practically come to this platform. You take the process seriously. You take the sadhana seriously. You take the vaidhi seriously. Then you'll come to rag. And then Rupa Goswami says the most important element is that you must get association with those who have rag. You get this their association, then you will also get that taste. Is that okay? Any other question or comment?
Where are you talking about?
The most important factor is to take the guru in the heart. That is the most important factor. But the what we call the samskara, or the ritual, or the external show, is the formalization of that relationship, like that. So it's just like marriage, right? The boy and the girl are together. The boy says to the girl, "I love you." She says, "Then marry me." He says, "No, I don't have to marry you because I love you." And she says, "Then marry me then." Right? And he says, "No, I don't have to because I love you." So then in a culture, today that's what happens, but in a cultured civilization, then yes, you have to perform the yajna. You have to have the formal commitment. Because it's an external show of your internal commitment. So that's why we have to take initiation, because it's an external show to the guru, to the Vaishnava community, and also to ourselves, of that commitment. So it is necessary. But as you said, the main thing is actually what's in the heart. Because you can do the external, but if there's nothing in the heart, or if it's not completely surrendered in the heart, then it's not enough. Does that answer the question? Okay. Any question?
Guru, before you were talking about the application of sila and how this part is Krishna's will is and then it's the lips, is that right? So what is the reason why Krishna wears sila?
Why does Krishna wear tilak? Because in Nanda Maharaj's home, Nanda Maharaj has a temple of Narayan. So everyone in Vrindavan worships Lord Narayan as God. No one worships Krishna as God. So Krishna is a devotee of Narayan. So he's a Vaishnava. So all the devotees wear tilak. Everyone in Vrindavan wears tilak because they're all devotees. And whenever something happens to Krishna, everyone prays to Narayan. Lord Narayan, please protect Krishna. Please protect Krishna. Like that. So that's why Krishna wears tilak.
And what about Srimati Radharani?
Radharani wears tilak, but what colour is Radharani? No, she's not white. She's gold. What colour is tilak? So you can't see her. That's why you don't see Radharani wearing tilak. It's not that she's not wearing it. Is that you can't see it. Like that. That's why we don't put it on the deities of Radharani. Like, we don't put it on. But in the spiritual world, she has it. Yeah, it's not like Radharani doesn't say, "Well, everyone else here can wear tilak, but I'm special, I'm not going to wear tilak." No. She wears tilak, but we can't see it, that's all.
Just on that point of initiation, Prabhupada gives the example of a power point. You have to be plugged in and switched on. And so the initiation is basically that function of plugging in and switching on, and then you've got the full connection with the powerhouse. Without that formal initiation, then you're not properly connected. And also another point about, walking into the picture, I think we're probably more likely to follow in Prabhupada's footsteps. He sort of set the example of this, and the prophet obviously didn't, but is more than likely more advanced than most of us. And so, most of us will have to follow the prophet's footsteps, and highly likely we'll just leave our bodies, but that doesn't mean that leaving our bodies in a fairly ordinary fashion doesn't mean that we won't go back home back to Godhead. It's just that it may not be as dramatic as walking into a picture.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said that most of us will leave like that. Our consciousness has to be rag. It has to be absorbed in Krishna at the time of death.
Also, I think what Ananda said, we are getting also Harinam. When you say Harinam, we are getting Harinam from the Guru. That's another point we are initiating. Getting directly from the Guru. So the importance of Harinam is very much bigger. Greatly. If you are getting the holy name from Guru, it has very great importance.
But you get Harinam before you meet the Guru, before you have initiation, actually. The holy name is given to you by the Guru, Mr. T. Chandra Krishna. initiation is actually a formal recognition by Krishna. Okay, he's now mine. Got the name, he's got the new creator, got the team, I've got the name.
One of the reasons we do initiation is because it's a samskara. Samskara means impression. So it puts on our consciousness, okay, this is serious. You know, like you have an initiation. It's like when you get married. Like you can just say, okay, we're married now. That's what people do these days. You know, people just say, oh, I'm married. Do you marry me? Yes, I marry you. Yes. Okay, we're married. And then 2 years later, not married. So it's not really, you know. So that's why you have the big thing. That's why you have the big, you know, and you spend, you know, $900,000 and you do the whole thing. Because then it actually puts in your consciousness, oh, this is a big thing. Right? In a cultured society, that's why they had, that's why in India the marriages go for a week. Right? Because it really puts in everyone's mind, it's like, you know, this is serious. Like, you see the bride and groom, sometimes you go to India and you see the marriages, like in Vrindavan, and you see the bride and groom, and I don't know what day it is that you see them, but it looks like they're quite tired. Because they've probably been through about 5 days already. And they're kind of like, you know, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? And at the end of it, they're like, okay, this is serious. I've got to be committed. So that's why we have initiation. Because it puts it on our consciousness that this is a commitment. It's not something you can turn back on. I think so. Any other questions? The difference is that you've married into the disciplic succession. You've committed yourself to that's the difference. Something happens. I remember the day I got first initiation, something happens. Like you feel a clearing of past karma. Something definitely happens. But, you know, you wake up the next morning and you feel very inspired. But 6 months later, you've got the same mind, right? You're in the same body, right? And it's just, it's a long haul like that. So initiation isn't the end, it's the beginning. All it means is now you're connected to the disciplic succession in a formal way, in a formal commitment. But there's a lot of hard work. Just like Prabhu Vishnu Swami, he's coming here next week. Then he said to me one time, he said, it's a long road, Keshava. Because you know, he's already been practicing, you know, 30, 40 years already. He said, it's a long road. Like that. So you've got to be ready. When you take initiation, it's like when you get married. Okay, it's a long road. When you take initiation, it's a long road. It's not something you can just drop in the future because, oh, now I don't feel like doing it. No, it's a commitment. And that's what it takes to get back to the spiritual world. Oh, that's it. Does that answer what you're saying? Any other question?
So, it's easier if you have a relationship with them. But the thing is, as you mentioned, that one should follow the, you know, should be good in materialistic aspect. So if you don't have, you know, the parents or the family who are not professional, so on the same time you have to serve them being a family person. So how to perform?
Yeah, it's difficult because previously you'd be a Vaishnava and your family is also a Vaishnava. Now this is not always the case. So it's like a special tattva. It's like it says that Shiva tattva is very difficult to understand. Because Shiva is not Krishna, he's not Vishnu, he's not Jiva, he's Shiva tattva, it's something else. So then we have parent tattva. It's not easy to understand. Right, because we have it, we do have a connection, we do have a responsibility, we do have a commitment, but they're not always devotees. So it's like it's difficult to understand and how to balance all of that out. So the best way to do it is to take advice of other devotees who have done the same thing, because there's more senior devotees who you're associating with, and they go, everyone's got the same problems, particularly in the Indian families, right? Then they all go through the same problems. right? The son joins the brahmachari ashram. Right? The son starts wearing saffron. Right? The mother has a heart attack. It's the same problems. They come up again and again and again. And it's all the devotee, you know, when are you going to get married? Huh? The mother and father are putting pressure on the son. When are you going to get married? When are you going to get married? Right? And the son wants to marry a devotee. And they want to just marry some, you know, from some, you know, family connection or something. Same problem. Right? So many devotees have already gone through it. So if you want to work out how to do it, then you ask the devotees, because so many devotees already went through the same thing. And take their guidance. Basically, because I've been listening to my spiritual master's final lectures recently, and one of the overwhelming qualities of my particular guru, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, one of his overwhelming qualities, which he was very well known for, was his, because he was seen as the most senior devotee in ISKCON, right? When Prabhupada left, he was seen as the most senior disciple. But his overwhelming quality, which he was very well known for, is that he would always consult with the other devotees before he would do anything. Right? He said, I remember he said one time, I don't trust any one person's mind, including my own. Right? So you always, in spiritual life, you always consult. Right? You don't just do that and do this and do that and do this. No, you consult. Right? And when you consult with the devotees, then you'll be safe. Because the devotees, everyone is experiencing the same thing. So many devotees who are ahead of you on the path, they've already gone through the same things that you're going through. So by consulting with them, then you're remain safe. Any other question, comment? Deity in the universe. Yeah. Well, she just wants to know about Tota Gopinath. That's a long, long, long subject. Basically, it's a long subject, but when Lord Brahma created the universe before there was anyone else in it, describes in the Bhagavatam that he had a darshan of Krishna. That Krishna that he saw was Tota Gopinath. And then Tota Gopinath is the first deity in the universe. He entered the universe as Tota Gopinath. So he's the oldest deity in the universe, Tota Gopinath. He's the original deity, first deity of Krishna in this universe. And that's why he's so important. He's one of the most important deities for the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. But there's a whole explanation of how and when and why and all these things, but it takes a long time to explain. So. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.